Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, or Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to the website AmericaOutLoud.com and check out the articles and podcasts, and please share those on social media. Tonight, we will be joined by Dr. Devi, who is running for New York City Public Advocate. A lot has been going on in New York City, and we will get to a lot of it tonight. We have a mayor's race coming up with Curtis Sliwa versus Eric Adams. Folks, we have seen how dangerous de Blasio has been for the city, taking citizens' freedoms and locking them in their homes, closing businesses, mandating vaccines, and the crime is skyrocketing faster than inflation under Joe Biden. New York City has got to get this right, not just in the mayor's race, but vote Republican all the way down the ballot. We have had on Thomas Kenneth, who's running for district attorney, Jackie Toberoff, who's running for city council. These are great candidates. I'm excited to talk to Dr. Devi tonight. But first off, how are you doing, Rob?
Andrew, I'm doing great. I'm also glad to have Dr. Devi on with us tonight. We need new ideas, new candidates, fresh thinking candidates, candidates that think outside of the box, candidates that don't think like de Blasio, who has basically destroyed my beloved New York City. When I walk out in the morning, take my kid to school, I'm embarrassed to say, I live in FIDI, the financial district. And I often find myself having to step over homeless people, stepping over human feces, the stench of human feces. I can't believe it. 2020 and COVID-19 was the perfect storm for de Blasio to come in and all of his acolytes, socialist, and destroy this beautiful city. Now, I know some will say, well, no, George Floyd and police brutality, and that's all a cop-out. It has nothing to do with the city being destroyed. That was just the perfect storm to usher in a lot of the craziness. Defund the police. Look at the crime that's in New York now. Brooklyn, the Bronx. People being shot and killed in broad daylight. The subways, people are being attacked. Some will say, well, it's the homeless. Okay, if it is the homeless, why are the homeless on the streets? They just opened a homeless shelter in my neighborhood. I'm all for the homeless having a place to stay. But in a residential area where there are kids, and you have men sitting on the side of the streets, smoking, drinking, and looking. What is this? But you know, de Blasio, he wants this. He says that it's okay. He even said once that he wants to, you know, change the makeup of the area. And I think Jackie Toberoff came on and told us this. He wants to change it because he thinks that there are too many rich white people living here. Well, the last I look, I'm not rich or white. Divisive politics, socialism. No, I don't know what our public advocate, Jamani Williams, is doing. No, I know what he's doing. I take that back. He's trying to position himself to run for governor. Yeah, he wants to run for governor. And the way I see it is just, it's just identity politics. As I have said before, Andrew, on a lot of our other shows, this will not end well if we don't grab the reins and call these people in, because it has gotten completely out of control. The crime, the high taxes, freedom is being taken away under the scare of the virus, the boogeyman virus, COVID-19. And if you don't take the vaccine, you're going to lose your livelihood. healthcare workers, who does that affect? Black and brown people. But no one is thinking. CRT is being pushed, a new form of segregation, but no one is thinking. They're looking at this and thinking, oh, we're going to hit a home run. We're doing it now. We're showing people who we are. But who are we? We are falling down. The city is falling down. Look across the board. And I hate to say it, but who's in charge? Democrats, liberals, white Democrats, black liberal Democrats. This is not what we want. This is not who we are as a people. We've got to fight back. Conservatives have got to wake up. We can no longer be afraid. We can no longer sit on the sidelines and just watch all of this happen and think, well, I've got mine and my family is okay, so be it. Yeah, but when you say that, look at what you're up against. They can counsel you. They can shut you down. They can take away what you think you have. As we watch TV, look at the individuals that are being threatened, that are being bullied, and no one is saying anything. It's okay. It's happening to a conservative. Who cares? Next. This will not end well at all. And it is time for conservatives to wake up and push back. It is time for conservatives to get involved. It is time for conservatives to get involved in every element of society. From the PTA, city council, the mayor, local representatives, even being a public advocate. And I am so glad that we have Dr. Devi, who is running as a candidate for that position, because it dispels the rumor that they can't do it. They're not concerned with it. It's only the white people that are doing it. No, we have an array of people that are doing it. We have people that are getting involved, and it's just not men. There are women also, women conservatives. It's not a misnomer. They are there, and they are standing up, and they deserve to be heard. And conservatives must support them. And don't look at the race and go, well, it's all blue. How can they win? Well, you're losing right there if you're not thinking positive. You get out there and you go to those blue areas and you say, here's a candidate. Listen to her ideas. She has the ideas that you want, the conservative ideas that many of you live your lives by. It is time to wake up, get involved, and start supporting these red candidates. Because if we don't, Andrew, it won't end well at all. And I want my beautiful New York City to be restored and returned to its greatness. Eric Adams, I have reservations about it. I don't think he's going to do anything. But as a public advocate, Dr. Devi, she can change things. So without further ado, I would ask our audience to listen and share this broadcast and get involved and support this candidate. Dr. Devi, how are you tonight?
I'm great. Thank you so much for that kind introduction.
Well, we're glad that you're on. I mean, here at After Dark, we try to reach out and find candidates that walk the walk, talk the talk, and are conservatives. Because many times their voices go unheard because the liberal media is not going to showcase them because they want people to think they don't exist. They're not there. But we know that you do exist and you are there. So tell our audience about yourself, Dr. Debbie.
Sure. So I actually fall into that category that you were referring to. I basically, you know, I work as a doctor. I'm a pain physician. So I've been in medicine or scientific research for almost 20 years. And I used to think, okay, I'm doing good work. I'm trying to help people, you know, people with disc herniations, cancer-related pain, HIV-related pain, but basically anybody who is suffering. And And I felt like I was a little too busy to pay attention to the things that were going on around me. So, you know, I've treated people with mental health concerns, people who are homeless, lots of veterans. So I treated people with combat related injuries, but it's just very time consuming work. So I saw injustices happening and I tried to fight them on an individual level. But it was during the COVID pandemic that I started to get this feeling of dread. And it wasn't just from the virus or even from the lockdowns, both of which affected me personally, but it was more this feeling that I was finally seeing how our government functions, like between the press conferences and seeing our government leaders kind of talking to each other. It just made me wonder if a lot of our leaders have any empathy for the people and if they understand the urgency of our situation quite the same as people who are on the front lines. So for me, working throughout the pandemic, treating patients, and I was actually separated from my child for 8 months because of COVID. It was a life, there were a lot of things that happened, but it was all a very life-altering experience.
It's something that you said that I think a lot of people can identify with is that it was during the pandemic that many of us, our eyes were open, especially when it came to education. And we saw the light, we saw what was happening and we didn't like it. And we said, hey, I've got to get involved. And even now we're looking at, I can't believe this has been happening before my very eyes. My eyes were open, but I wasn't paying any attention. I thought I would help in this way. But now we see that we have got to actively get involved politically in order to push our cause. Because if we don't, again, the Democrats, they want us to sit back and say absolutely nothing while they take control. So Dr. Debbie, as a public advocate, what does that role do exactly?
So there are different things that the public advocate can do. Now, traditionally, what's happened most recently is our public advocate calls out certain things that he thinks are unjust. So maybe on social media or perhaps at different rallies, but the public advocate actually has a lot more power than that. So the public advocate can look at the data from the city agencies. You know, he or she has access to all of that data. So to me as a physician, if somebody comes in with a problem, I don't just look at that person and say, oh, that doesn't look right. I blame this or I blame that. And, you know, I think your past physician is a bad physician. That doesn't make any sense. You know, we order tests, we do some kind of analysis to figure out what is wrong here, and then look at all the data that you gather and figure out what would make sense as a solution, maybe come up with a few different alternatives. So to me, that's something that a public advocate could do. If you have all this access to every single city agency's data, then why not figure out where some of the problems are coming from? And then on top of that, once you have that data, okay, the public advocate's not a dictator. They're not the ones that pass laws at city council, although they can introduce laws. But the public advocate is more, to me, more of an operations manager. So that doesn't have to be a partisan issue. That can be something where somebody sees a problem and then puts out the analysis, sort of makes the data more transparent so everybody can kind of look at it, and then other people can come up with solutions. So in this case, the public advocate seems to be more sort of an in-name only sort of position where everybody wonders, what does the public advocate do? And in the past, they've even wondered, do we need a public advocate at all? Because I think a social media influencer could do the same thing that, you know, our current public advocate is doing, frankly.
And what exactly is our current public advocate doing besides just going on TV and being seen?
Well, that's what I'm seeing more of.
Because what you just described, is that if the public advocate is able to fulfill all of that, I mean, certainly, a lot of the issues that we see that are taking place, I would think that our public advocate would be out there raising these issues. And while it doesn't have to be a partisan type position, I would think that that person would say, hey, look at the homeless people that we have on the streets. What are we doing? What is the mayor doing? I don't agree with the mayor that we should just let them out. I think for a year, there was a homeless woman living about two blocks down. And just the other day, I walked by and they had removed her. I mean, she was literally living there. She had a bag, her belongings. She had, you know, all this other stuff. And the area was completely filthy. Now, if it were any other time, I would think they would say, you know, this is a public health hazard. Who knows what could be taking place here? And you would think the same thing now with COVID taking place. All of the homeless people that are out there, have they been vaccinated? Do they have masks? The ones I have seen, they don't have a mask. I mean, Tim, I just can't believe this is happening, Dr. Debbie, in New York City. How did it get to this?
Well, I think that you brought up a great point that what's happened is different problems get labeled under one large umbrella and then it becomes unapproachable. So like homelessness becomes one issue where the public advocate can talk about homelessness, but let's look at it a little bit more in detail. So I've treated a lot of homeless people and usually there's a lot more to it. So some people are homeless because, you know, they don't end up on the street right away. First of all, what happens is maybe they get physical injuries, you know, they have some psychiatric problems, then they get medical debt, they're unable to work. So there's an employment issue also. One thing leads to another. Maybe they try to crash on their, you know, parents' sofa or bed, friends, family, who knows what. But after they've exhausted all of these options, then they end up in the street. So they have medical problems and psychological problems too, financial problems, all of it. Then you have other people who are maybe were in prison. They have also problems with employment and other issues. They're released. So they have no plan for how to get reintegrated into society. So that's another problem that we have. Then we have people who are maybe, you know, they are released from, as a lot of these hospitals or psychiatric facilities closed, they have no access to medical care. So that's another problem. They can't get their medications. They don't have insurance. None of this is looked at. Even Thrive NYC, I don't know, that money was lost. So I have homeless people that I've seen because I worked throughout the pandemic while I was pregnant. And I have homeless people approaching me saying they will vote for me and help me. Even they don't care about political party. They say that while they were on the streets, they saw me walking back and forth, you know, 8 months pregnant. And to them, Thrive NYC was supposed to be money that was saved for them, but was wasted somewhere, it's unclear. And so they suffered as well, just like the taxpayer. So, you know, you have people who are in that situation. Then I have people who are disabled, who are struggling, like maybe, I'm not sure if they're homeless or not, because sometimes people don't want to be forthcoming, but they say that it's so unsafe in these shelters. So they're really worried about crime. Because I see people where I'm like, where's your cane? What are you doing? You know, that's unsafe. You could fall. They say, I can't go anywhere with my cane. It's like a target on my back for someone to attack me. It's so unsafe. So they're worried about staying in shelters, getting robbed, having their medications taken. And, you know, then the reason I mention all these things is because if we really investigated what's going on, then we have to look at, well, what's wrong with our public safety? And, you know, it really goes against defunding the police and defunding law enforcement, right? Like we need more police. We need to do much more in the homeless shelters. We need to do more, you know, to tackle these problems. If people are committing crimes, it's not the homelessness by itself that's causing a problem. It's the fact that some of these people are sociopaths, just like anyone in society. A person's a sociopath, so they have to be reported. And if something where they need medication or they need treatment or they need to be hospitalized, you know, more long-term, in front of a court and you have somebody capable, that person can say this person needs to be, you know, hospitalized for the safety of others. But by making it all one simple term, everybody's homeless. And if you say anything about it, then there's something wrong with you. It's like, you know, nothing gets done and nobody knows what's happening.
Doctor, I hear the compassion in your voice. And I really appreciate that because you just summed up the problem. Well, one of the problems that we have with the homeless and people not understanding. And you just gave us what happens, why that condition exists. Any number of reasons, a person got hurt, they lost their job and they don't want to say anything. And then it just continues to snowball. And then wham, that person is overwhelmed, mental illness sets in, and they're out in the streets. That's what I would like. I would think that a public advocate would be someone who has a fundamental understanding as to what's happening. Because once you understand and identify the problem, you can address it best. you can go out and talk to people about it, as opposed to saying, let's just build a shelter and throw them in. I mean, that would be my approach, build a shelter and throw them in. But as you said, there are so many other layers that's behind it. And building the shelter and throwing them in there does not address the underlying issue. It will still exist. And if we're able to understand and identify the underlying issue, we can best help these individuals. So I thank you for explaining that and breaking it out to our listeners, because I'm sure that there are many others that think that put them in a shelter and they'll be okay, but they won't be okay. And as you said, some of them don't want to go to shelters because they're afraid. And unfortunately, our shelters, some of the shelters aren't kept the way they should be. So just giving them a place to lay their head and then turning them out on the streets without giving them either mental help, economic help, helping them get a job, helping them to understand what they're going through, all of that is important. Now, you mentioned Thrive NYC. Isn't that the program that the mayor's wife, when he and the mayor, he and his wife had put together?
Yes. So it was a program that supposedly was supposed to be dedicated to homelessness and mental health. And it's unclear how much money was actually spent on it, but it's somewhere between $800 million or $1.2 billion, according to different reports. These are from, you know, the New York Times, Politico, so not solely conservative media, but it seems that the money, I don't want to say missing, but it's not clear exactly how it was spent or where it was spent. So I feel
Dr. Deffy, I just want to say one thing. You're being far too calm. You're being far too kind. Okay, I'll say it for you. Charlene, will you please show us the receipts? Where is the money? We've talked about that on this show, okay? So you're being very kind, and I appreciate that, but I will just say it. Charlene, I want to see the receipts. What did you do with the money? Go ahead, Dr. Deffy.
Well, I was going to say, you know, so when I talk to people, sometimes I try to be diplomatic, but I feel like data doesn't lie. You know, data doesn't lie. So the public advocate, this should not be a mystery, because the city's money, there should be receipts somewhere for where this money went. So there are different people who would have access to that budget, or where did things go? And the public advocate should be one of them. So whatever the words may be, like, things should be published out there for the public to see. And what I've noticed with our city is that, because before I decided to run, I thought, let me just figure out what's going on here in the first place, just so I can understand. So what happens is the city puts out this data, but it's in a very sort of difficult to find location, sort of buried under different layers of bureaucracy. So you really have to be almost like a detective to try to find any data and figure out how things are done here. And then even then, there's sort of like, you know, there's all these other companies that things are hidden under, different consultants and different things. So it's very hard to figure out exactly what's going on. But I think things like that, where it's the taxpayers' money that's being spent this way, it shouldn't be such a mystery. People should have some idea, especially for $1 billion, where did it go? I mean, in our medical practice, you know, if a patient gets charged a copay twice, that's happened in several years' time. Maybe that's happened a handful of times that somebody lost track of a copay or something. And then I personally apologize to these patients. So we have thousands of patients, but I can count on one hand how many times that's happened. And nevertheless, granted, the city is huge, but I don't understand how $1 billion can go missing. Nobody knows what happened, and everybody shrugs their shoulders. That to me sounds crazy.
We are here with Dr. Deffy, who's running for New York City Public Advocate. Dr. Deffy, things have gotten so much more dangerous under de Blasio. I read the other day about a guy who's been arrested 46 times this year alone for shoplifting. What are your thoughts on these criminals or mentally ill people that are going to jail constantly and being released? We see a lot of liberals pretend that this is the humane thing to do and way to treat these people. What are your thoughts on that?
So I think first we have to separate out who's a sociopath from who has an actual mental illness. A person could have both, but if a person's a sociopath, That's completely different. I mean, either they have no empathy for others, or they are maybe a sadist and they enjoy hurting others. I mean, shoplifting may be considered nonviolent crime, but I think it's different than mental illness. And I think that's one of the myths that people use to make others feel bad about reporting crimes or doing anything about crime by making it seem like it's a medical condition when it's not. If you are making choices, whether it's violent or nonviolent, if you're making choices to do something that you believe is wrong, like stealing from another person, you know, that's a problem. And so we should address that. I mean, to me, I think that whatever laws we have, we should enforce them. If the law is unfair, if we think that the law is unfair, biased, then we should either change that law. If we think the penalty is too harsh, then we should change the penalty. But it doesn't make sense to have a law and a penalty and say, well, sometimes we'll enforce it and sometimes we won't. And we're not going to be clear about what we're doing. We're just going to let the person who's supposed to enforce it figure out what they're supposed to do on their own, because I think that just leads to all kinds of biases and problems, and people start to lose trust and faith in the whole system when you do things like that. So to me, I think, you know, shoplifting in particular is very dangerous if you think about businesses. I mean, New York City, we need people to have jobs and we need the economy to thrive. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I'm a Republican. I'm a small business owner. It's a little different. We're a medical practice, but I know friends like during the pandemic, you know, all their PPE was stolen. They got broken into for medication. Sometimes, like, you know, we don't really have opioids or anything. Most medical practices don't carry things like that, but people never know. So they get broken into for these types of things. But it just makes people then not want to open businesses, right? Because employees could get hurt, patients could get hurt, or if it's a storefront, you know, customers can get hurt. Any number of things can happen. So we should have an environment that is pro-business, and that alone would allow people to get more jobs. That could take a big, bite out of crime and all of that, and help our society in so many different ways. We just need to have an economy that thrives.
Yeah, I'm sure business owners love what you're saying and want these shoplifters arrested. You guys are tuned in to After Dark with Rob and Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all the great shows. We'll be back with more Dr. Debbie on After Dark with Rob and Andrew.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutLoud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
You know, Healthy Cell is a terrific lineup of products. They have products that are pill-free, gel-pack vitamins. Looking for better sleep, focus, and energy? Check out Healthy Cell, the leading innovator in nutritional supplements for cell health. Healthy Cell has a product that helps REM sleep, helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep Supplement. The only sleep supplement that's designed to support all stages of sleep. And boy, is it needed now during all the stress of the COVID-19 pandemic. So go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any product from Healthy Cell. I use them every day. I believe in them, and you should too. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
And we're back after dark with Robin Andrew. And our guest tonight is Dr. Debbie, who's running for public advocate in New York City. As we're closing out the first half of the show, we're talking about Thrive New York, Thrive NYC. And our guest tonight was being rather gracious when she was describing, you know, the program and what was happening with the money. Now, you guys know me, and on After Dark with Robin Andrew, I don't hold back. So I'm not going to hold back, and I'm not done with that topic, because I am demanding an accountability from Charlene McRae de Blasio. I want to know, what the heck did she do with the $1 billion? I mean, I can't figure it out. And no one is holding her accountable. I don't care if the mayor will soon be leaving. He can't get out soon enough. I can't believe that he got 2 terms. I mean, can you believe it? This guy, a socialist, a communist, 2 terms in liberal New York City. And what has he done? Well, he gave Charlene $1 billion, and we don't know what happened to it. In the meantime, we got homeless people all over the place. The crisis has just exploded. Now, they will blame COVID-19. Oh, because of COVID. They blame COVID on everything. Crime. Oh, COVID-19. People are getting, they're finally connecting with each other, and tempers are flaring and they're getting mad. Blame COVID-19. Everything is on COVID-19. I can't believe it. So is she going to say that COVID-19 took the $1 billion? I want to know what happened with the money. Where is it? And no, me asking what happened to the money is not racism, because I'm sure she'll run to that. Well, you're questioning a woman as to what she, that she can't handle the money. Well, yes, I am questioning your ability, because I want to know what happened with the money. Andrew, it makes no sense. $1 billion. Now, I doubt seriously that she's been shopping at any of the high-end stores like Saks, Bergdorf's, or anything, any Tony store on Fifth Avenue. I mean, I've seen her style, and you know, it's not desirable. I'm not making fun of her. I'm just speaking the truth here on After Dark. So what could she have done with that money? I mean, I don't think they've gone on any vacation. I mean, I think their son goes to Harvard or Yale. Maybe they squirreled away some money for that. The daughter, she's in and out of rehab, I think. And I think she was living in California. Maybe they're paying for her rental expenses. But that wouldn't even touch $1 billion. I mean, and like I said, I don't see any major changes that have taken place in the city. I mean, I could say that they used some of the money to paint Black Lives Matter on Fifth Avenue, but de Blasio used the city money, the city's money for that, which I thought was a colossal waste of time, but you know, he's de Blasio. So I still can't figure out $1 billion. Man, you know what I'm going to do, Andrew? I think I'm going to have to write a letter. I'm going to have to send her a letter and let her know. I demand to know. I demand to see the receipts. What happened with the people's money? People need to wake up and demand that she tell us what happened. I mean, she couldn't have used it on a re-election campaign. I mean, this is really disturbing me, guys. I need to know what happened with that money. I mean, this is completely unacceptable that our public officials are robbing us blind and we can't ask them what happened and they won't tell us. Completely unacceptable. I want to know what happened to the money with Thrive NYC. Is the program, is it now defunct? I mean, what do the staffings look like? How many people are staffed there? Only in New York City does this happen. Now, I had to get that out because it's extremely troubling for me. $1 billion that she was given. She lost it. You just don't lose $1 billion, Dr. Debbie. Come on. I mean, you went to Columbia, I think, and Harvard. I mean, you can pay off all your debt. You see what I mean? Am I wrong for asking what happened to this money?
You know, I agree with you completely. What troubles me is that, you know, just from what I've seen, just as a regular person, I don't think people, when $1 billion goes missing, I don't think people start with $1 billion. I think there's a buildup to things like that. So part of me wonders how much money has gone missing in our city over the years that we haven't even noticed. And then it was only when $1 billion went missing that anybody even noticed.
That is a great point. That is a very great point, because when you look around, you look at the city, and there are things that should be fixed that aren't fixed. I mean, I remember when Giuliani was the mayor. I remember when Bloomberg was the mayor. I mean, and they came in and they ushered in this entire like safe city, New York City, a big city, but they made it safe. I mean, Andrew, I don't think you've ever been to New York City, but man, it was, I mean, I would walk the streets late at night. I felt so safe. The subways, I felt completely safe. But now, I don't think so. So it just begs the question, as Dr. Debbie said, where is all this money that was allocated to the city? What are they doing with the money? I mean, they aren't fixing up the parks because our parks look run down. And as I mentioned, the homeless shelters, what they're doing is if they're taking high-end hotels and trying to turn them into homeless shelters, why would you even think to do that? Why would you even do that? I could see if they said, well, we're going to take the money and we're going to build an area for the homeless to live, and we're going to staff it. We're going to make certain that we get qualified people. And with this money, we'll be able to pay their salaries. But I don't think Charlene did that. So as you said, Dr. Debbie, little by little, the money's built up, is allocated for this and allocated for that. But even with that, you would think there would be receipts. Okay, I'm going to leave it alone for now. But Charlene, if you're listening, I want to know what happened to the money. Mayor de Blasio, I want to know, why haven't you taken care of the homeless crisis? I want to know, why is the stench in the city? Why haven't you taken care of the public parks? The transportation, I think that's a combination of the city and the state. But we were on lockdown for almost 18 months. When I get ready to ride the subway, I don't want any delayed trains. I don't want to hear anything about the tracks are malfunctioning, because you had all that time to fix it. You had all that time to clean it up. The subway should be spotless. There shouldn't be people sleeping on the trains. It's unacceptable. Now, speaking of sleeping on the trains and the homeless, Dr. Debbie, I know that your specialty is pain management, but what are your thoughts on COVID-19 and the vaccine? And complete disclosure, we here on After Dark feel that people should decide for themselves if they should take the vaccine. As I mentioned not too long ago, I'm vaxxed, and Andrew is still going to allow me to come on the show. Thank you, Andrew, for being so generous and understanding. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. But Dr. Debbie, what are your thoughts on the vaccine and COVID-19?
Yeah, so I mean, I am against the mandate. I've actually said that many times, and I was on some other national news segments pretty much the day that de Blasio announced the mandates. I was said the same thing at a rally, and I was somebody tried to attack me within less than a minute of me getting on the stage and speaking. I think that this person got more triggered, a protester, because I was a doctor saying something against the mandate. So, you know, the thing about the vaccine, I mean, I'll just say personally, I think for people who are older, higher risk, the data that we have seems to support getting the vaccine. So, you know, I am a supporter of getting the vaccine if you're in a high risk group, but I think that something is really wrong with the trust in our society, and the way that the government is handling things is eroding the trust further. So first of all, most recently in the past couple of weeks, the FDA came out against boosters for any and all people. But then all of a sudden we had this CDC panel convened and the CDC said, oh no, take that back. We're changing this. Okay, people should get boosters. I thought that is so irregular. And each of these steps that have been done, sometimes people don't realize because they may not be familiar with how things are usually done in medicine. But typically once the FDA says no to something, you don't have all these specialists getting involved and saying, oh yes, we'll keep moving forward. Because the CDC is really a specialist, a group of infectious disease specialists. Then on top of that, with the mandates, you know, if you have a convincing argument for vaccines, you shouldn't need a mandate. But to me, as a public, you know, as a public advocate candidate or public advocate, the way I would look at it is we have to do what's best for the city. So some people are terrified of the virus, some people are terrified of the vaccine. So, you know, there's no answer right now for both of those people, but a mandate sort of polarizes people further because you immediately take those two groups and turn them against each other. Nothing productive can come of an action like that. And on top of that, you know, what I've noticed about de Blasio's administration is that it tends to end up with these lose-lose-lose situations. So with the mandate, what happened was that pretty much people who were terrified of the vaccine either had to lose their jobs or they had to get vaccinated and be terrified, or, you know, so many things happened to them. So they were harmed by this. People who are small business owners, regardless of how they felt about the vaccine or not, they suffered because they suddenly had to enforce these mandates, and that cost them either way. If they enforced it, they lost some business because people were like, you're taking this out on us. If they didn't enforce it, they got fined. On top of that, you know, even bigger businesses got hurt because they were like, oh, we're either working remotely or something's happening. The International Auto Show, for example, not a business, but they were like, we're not doing this here, you know, out. They canceled their program. They didn't say it was because of the mandates. They said it was a combination of COVID and the measures used to treat COVID, but they were gone. So all the tourism, all the jobs, all the money that could have come from that, gone. And then on top of that, let's just look at healthcare, which is my area. We suddenly had all these staffing shortages because people quit. It's not solely doctors and nurses, but it's also, you know, you need medical assistants, you need people to clean the hospitals, to do all kinds of things, dietary, everything for the hospital to run. So they quit. So basically the hospital then couldn't maybe take care of as many people with heart disease, heart attacks, cancer. So that hurts the public. And I think we're going to see that in all these different areas of our city. So how can you create a situation where you've harmed everyone? You've even harmed the unions that backed you, because the unions lost a lot of power when all these members got fired. I just feel like it's a step towards anarchy.
Yeah, I love that sign that I seen nurses holding out in front of the New York City hospitals that said last year's heroes, this year's unemployed. We see the same thing happening in schools. The parents feel like their children are not, or they don't have a choice in their children's lives. What do you think of masking children in schools? Also, how do you think New York City handled the pandemic with children missing so much school? And they continue to miss so much school. I read a story about one player on a football team tested positive for coronavirus, and the entire team had to miss school for 2 weeks. It just seems a little obsessive.
So my experience with children in the pandemic, this is actually what got me into this race in the first place. So when I'm a pain physician, I do procedures like nerve blocks in the spine for people who have pain, and all kinds of spinal injections in an operating room type suite. So basically, I got the notice that daycare was closed. I have a toddler. And then the first thing I had to worry about is, well, how, this is the initial lockdown back in March. So, you know, she can't come to the operating room to sit there, especially with radiation and everything. So it's sort of like an immediate problem with childcare. So then I thought, okay, well, maybe I'm lucky. I have my parents, you know, my husband's there, but he can't watch her all the time. So my parents were watching her. I thought I would see her 2 weeks later, which is the longest time that she's been away, I didn't see her again for 8 months because, you know, for me, I actually would have been better off closing the business because it was losing money just with this all this overhead for this operative equipment and all this other stuff. But I thought about it, if I close my practice and stop doing these things, all these patients that I was taking care of, they would be stuck. They're seeing a pain management specialist because they can't have their pain treated by other doctors. So that means they would go to the ER and that would be a death sentence. So if I look at it from a child's point of view, here's my two-year-old, you know, who lost her, not forever, but like lost her parents, her friends, her home one day, just out of the blue, doesn't know what happened because she just turned two. Then she was with my parents for 8 months. She came back to us. So my parents just disappeared again. That home that she knew disappeared and everything. She was back with us. She came back because I was having a baby and we didn't want her to feel depressed, you know, or replaced. So I was treating these, you know, thousands of patients while I was pregnant. And then of course, as soon as my two-year-old came back, you know, we all got infected and everything. And then my husband ended up, you know, on oxygen, hospitalized. We thought he might die. So then I thought my two-year-old got scared, you know, because all of a sudden her dad disappears once again. So again, a massive change. And then I started having contractions. So she's once again going to be stuck with without another person. So I think there's a lot of psychological harm. Meanwhile, my baby that I was carrying had to fight COVID in the womb, you know, here, kind of seeing all these patients before we got sick, then we're in isolation. But I was thinking, this is not very different from a soldier getting wounded, right? So it's, you know, in battle, but it's like, these are small kids, like an unborn baby and a two-year-old that have to do all this stuff when it should be the city that's helping us. And I did call the city because I called the city at that time and I said, I have a problem. You know, my husband is hospitalized, he's dying, and I can't send my child to my parents because she has COVID and she could kill them. I can't give her to anybody. I can't get childcare because nobody has PPE. And this is way before the vaccine. So I said, you know, I don't know what to do because I'm getting contractions and I don't know what's going to happen to my toddler. So then, because I thought I have to go to the hospital now too. So then the city's response was, I guess, well-meaning person, but they were basically like, this sounds like an unsafe situation. Maybe, we should get, you know, child protective services. They didn't use that term, but that's basically what they said, to take my toddler away from me in the middle of this. So I really decided there's something wrong with the government, you know, the mentality of people. And then also in terms of children, I feel like everything from education to the psychological effects of COVID on these kids and the lockdowns, there's just not any empathy towards these children and they can't fight for themselves.
So doctor, what did you end up doing with your child?
Well, so then we actually had people. So this is what I saw with the sick patients that I treat too. You have a sick person trying to take care of a person who's sicker. So my husband's aunt, who is not well, said she would come to take care of us because she's, you know, not that healthy, but like she had had COVID earlier. So she thought she'd get it a second time, but she said she would come anyway from Georgia to help us. So she did, but there were other people like his sister said, you know, she and her family would risk catching COVID again. Doesn't matter because our child shouldn't end up in an orphanage. So that was another option. But then you also have, when you're in a desperate situation, predators appear, right? So there was a person who said, okay, she'll come help us. She was the first one who called. For $1,000 a day, she'll watch our child. Now, I wasn't trying to save money at that time, obviously. So $1,000 a day, I was like, okay. But I was like, why are you not scared of COVID? So then she's like, oh, because I have COVID. So I'm like, you mean you had COVID before? No, I have COVID right now, but I don't care. I can ride the subway back and forth. So this is before people had really a lot of PPE. So I'm like, you could infect everybody. She's like, yeah, it's fine. So I thought, okay, this person is going to infect the whole city. And on top of that, I have a feeling while I'm in the hospital with my other baby, you know, new baby, she's probably going to hold my toddler for a ransom or who knows what, because I'm just going to give my child to this stranger because I'm in a desperate situation. But I think these are the kinds of things. Unfortunately, I'm not the only person who has to deal with these crazy situations. I heard so many crazy stories from the patients, but I thought, where are our leaders in the middle of this? What are they doing?
You know, that's what you just said is just unbelievable. I would have never imagined someone going through what you went through. And that just goes to show that we never know what someone else is going through during this pandemic. And like you said, that is a reason why you decided to run, or you are running for public advocate. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on the virus? Andrew and I, we go backwards and forward. We talk about it. It is real. But it seems as if though our government, our elected officials have scared everyone that we don't know what to believe. And I know that the virus attacks people differently. And you telling us about you had it, your child, and then your husband, and you thought your husband was going to die. How is he now?
So he's good, you know, thank goodness. Actually, they said he wasn't well, but I talked to him over FaceTime. I mean, he didn't talk much. I more talked to him, but I told him to come back at that time because I was still worried. Nobody is our family, like close family members. So I was worried that if somebody tried to take our child away, there would be a problem because there's no parent, you know. So he came back home, and then 4 hours later, I was in the hospital. But as to what you're saying, you know, so certain people, it's the same thing I saw too. Certain people got really sick. I think I take care of sicker patients, so I tended to see a little bit more of that. But on the other hand, me, I would have been considered, I think, high risk myself just for a couple of reasons, but I really didn't have, I was not well, but I think that was related more to the pregnancy. But the thing I thought during this is I felt like there was a decent chance in my mind that I might die during this whole process. I mean, you start to get this feeling of doom and gloom, not at that moment, but as I was going around and stuff, and then I thought, you know what, if I die, it's not even going to be classified as a maternal mortality death. It's going to be classified as a COVID death. So part of me started to wonder how many of these situations, so I'll just describe what I mean. I went to the hospital by myself when I was in labor, and they would not let me in through the OB entrance because they said that I could infect the other patients because I said I was positive for COVID. It's out of the quarantine period, but I was still positive for COVID because they tested me recently. So then I disclosed that I'm a doctor, of course. So they would not let me in. So then I went, they told me to walk around this massive hospital complex. So I went to the other side. Then they're like, you know, so you're short of breath. It's 20 degrees because this is like freezing cold too. So I'm trying to walk between like being short of breath and in labor and everything. I go to the other side. Then the emergency room tells me, well, yeah, we treat COVID, but we do not treat people in labor. So you can't come in here. You have to walk back to OB and whatever. So then I was thinking, what is this? I'm going to die on the street because like labor is accelerating. But then, you know, I feel like that's the mentality. If I physically got into the hospital, then I become their problem. But as long as I'm on the street, no matter what happens to me, if I drop dead on the sidewalk, it's nobody's problem, you know?
Oh,
it
man.
Sounds so crazy. So in the end, I was okay. But I was thinking this will all go down as a COVID death if something happens to me. But it's not really that. So I really think people had a very hard time getting medical care because everyone was scared of COVID and all the mismanagement that we had in the city. I mean, the whole thing was, like I said earlier, life altering enough that I lost so many things temporarily. I got them back. But my husband, my child, my own health, my business, like all these things, one after the other, it was enough for me to say, this is not something that I can work on an individual basis. There's something seriously wrong in our city. And maybe this happened for a reason. Like I've got to think about this and do something.
Right. So overall, what is your analysis about the virus and the vaccine?
Okay, sorry. So my feeling about the virus is at this point, things seem to be much significantly better. We're always going to have variants. I mean, that happens with every virus. It's always going to try to mutate to beat us. But traditionally, With viruses, they mutate so that they're more contagious. So that's not a surprise, but they usually mutate to be less deadly, because if they kill you, what's the point? If they kill you, they're dead too. So usually you will see things that evolve to become like the flu, more contagious, but less deadly in general than they were in their original form. And in terms of vaccine, you know, whatever the vaccine may be, there's definitely a lot more data that needs to be disclosed. I don't understand exactly what's going on in terms of the data being released. But I think the vaccine is one of the reasons that things seem to be getting better. But on the other hand, you know, it fluctuates. That doesn't mean that people should be forced to do things against their will or, you know, freedom. That's one of the basic principles of our country, right? That people should have a right to choose on these things. And especially when things are getting better, I don't see any reason why you should mandate people to have a vaccine at all.
Right. Okay. So we're coming up on the hour, unfortunately, and I have so many questions that I want to ask, and I'm sure our audience that's listening are probably asking themselves and want us to ask you. I would ask you this: will you come back an hour or so talking about the vaccine? Because your story in itself, I'm sure that other people have been in situations as to what am I going to do if I get sick and my child. And we've heard stories of families, moms and dads died and leaving behind children. And no one ever expected that. And I'm not saying this to scare people, but at the same time, I'm listening to your approach and what you're saying as to how this was rolled out, and that people shouldn't be forced to take the vaccine, and that we need to stop and we need to listen. This is a type of conversation I think that we need to have in our communities. We need to have it so that people can understand what exactly we're dealing with here. And like you said, right now it seems that things seem to be on an even keel, but viruses mutate. And Andrew and I, like I said, we talk about this all the time. And having you on tonight, I mean, that just gives me reason to say we need to bring you back. Wouldn't you agree, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been so nice to hear from a doctor that's so pragmatic. We see so many of these doctors that they bring out on TV that they're just there to either push the vaccine or push something else. And it just feels like they are not being truthful to what they really believe. And it's just been really nice to hear Dr. Devi be really pragmatic and honest from the get-go.
Thank you. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
And Dr. Devi, we appreciate you coming on tonight. Where's the best spot people can go to support you and your campaign?
So if they go to www.drdevi4nyc.com, so drdevi4nyc.com, that would be great. We're trying to reach the matching funds threshold, but I will say on a positive note, we qualified for debate. We're waiting for the official notice, but we actually outraised the current incumbent public advocate, even in blue New York City, this past period.
Wow.
Fundraised him.
That is fantastic news. Keep up the good work. Thank you all for joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew. Check us out and all the other shows over at AmericaOutloud.com, who celebrated its fifth anniversary this year. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcast. We will see you guys next time. Remember, stand for something or you will fall for nothing.